Last time I was up here with this fellow, he said I wouldn't introduce him. So since he's been gone so long, I thought it might be wise to introduce Brother Smith to you. So it's all yours.
It's a privilege to come to the pulpit again, not because I'm Richard Smith or related to any of you or unrelated to any of you, but because it is a privilege to come here to again think of that which God has done for us each through Jesus Christ. The message of tonight deals with the subject, what would I have done if I had been there? It's very easy to say, now if I had been there, if I were in that situation, I would have done certain things under those circumstances, and I certainly wouldn't have been like one of those other fellows or persons who was there. In preparing for this message tonight, I thought and thought and thought and thought about different characters. And I kept reviewing in my mind the ministry of Jesus Christ. And I came to a certain conclusion, and I'm sure you'll know that which it is in just a moment. The ministry of Jesus is framed and surrounded by the personality of his followers, and particularly his disciples. After the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, we see almost immediately that Jesus was walking along the Sea of Galilee, and having gone through the power of that temptation there in that wilderness, and having noted his own personal needs, I believe, he, walking by the Sea of Galilee, began to gather his support ministry. And at this time then, he met four men. First of all, we see that he met Simon, Peter, and Andrew. And then he met James and John. Simon, Peter, and Andrew were mending nets along the shore, and the other men were out in a boat. But when Jesus called these individuals, he called, note, individuals who were busy. He called individuals in whom he apparently saw qualities that perhaps no other person could note would be in their character. Of the four who were called that day, and later he called eight others, two are in the forefront. One is named Peter, and the other is named John. Apparently, and I believe this is correct, John was the younger of the two. Tonight I would like to look then at Simon Peter. I would like you to look fully into his face, and I'm sure that I can only touch briefly on that which he was. Why do I say this? Why would I use Peter as the center and the core of my message tonight? Of course, we will not get away from our emphasis on the sacrifice of Jesus. But I would like simply for you to see Peter, to see him as a person who is characteristic of the human race. And then further, that I would like to see him, like you to see him, as a picture of the normal, quote, church people that we meet day by day. Peter is impetuous. He's just willing to jump out and do anything. He is promising and not fulfilling. He is acting impatiently, and he is questioning, and is so much like we human beings. Yet his very nature is set forth in his own name. Peter, Petros, rock. foundation, something upon which something could specially be built. And Jesus looks to this man, and he then says to him, Peter, I want you to follow me. I will make you a fisher of men. And the interesting thing is that Peter and John immediately forsook their nets. I saw a little play one time that about this calling of the disciples. And they had some bringing in fish and some mending nets and all the other things. And someone came along and these fellows left and they said, well, what are we going to do with all these dirty, rotten, stinking fish now? They left their vocation, left all this to someone else. But you see, they were leaving something that was relatively unimportant and something that many of us think is probably more important than anything else, even than the Master, if we're not careful. This idea of seeking something that is material, making sure that we have security in life. And we will talk about this in just a little while. But they followed him. They accepted the challenge. They moved out of where they were into a domain that was governed by one who was not yet crowned king, but one who apparently had a sufficiently magnetic personality that he could say, come and follow me. And they were willing to go. It was after Jesus had performed his miracle, when he fed the thousands of people with the five loaves and the two fishes, at that particular one or 5,000 had been fed. But we find that they went into a ship and some type of boat on the Sea of Galilee. And that Sea of Galilee is a very shallow body of water, relatively speaking. And when wind blows over shallow water, the storms, waves are great. And the danger is there. It's like some of our great lakes in the northern part of our country. But as Jesus and the disciples were in the ship, according to the 14th chapter of the Gospel according to Matthew, and it says the ship was now, they were in the ship, and I'm not sure exactly in this particular instance whether Jesus was in the ship or out of the ship, but it says the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. But something happened. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. When the disciples were walking on the sea, they were troubled, thinking that some ghost or apparition was out there. But Jesus straightway spoke to them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And then Peter, here's old impulsive Peter now. And Peter said, Lord, if you're yourself, what you say you are, then bid me to come unto thee on the water. And Jesus said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, beginning to sink. He cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said, O thou of little faith, why did you doubt? But you see the nature of the man. You see him, Lord, I'll go to you. Come on, invite me. And I starts out. And then he began to look at the water and took his eyes off the Master. And just like ordinary human beings, things start to go wrong. Anything goes haywire, as the expression goes. Then we begin to try to figure it all out and see how we can put it back together. And we get take our eyes off the one who can control it all. We see then further, according to Matthew, the 16th chapter and the 21st to the 22nd verse, that give us another little glimpse of Jesus' confrontation with Peter again. Remember, in spite of all that he saw, remember that in spite of all that he went through with Jesus, as time went on, he see him lapsing into a lack of faith and a lack of understanding. And someone asked then, someone said, that Jesus might be John the Baptist or Elias or other Jeremiah. And Jesus, according to the 15th verse of the 16th chapter of Matthew, said, but whom say ye that I am? And here again, the spokesman for the crowd. And Simon Peter answered and said, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then Jesus said to him, But blessed are you, flesh and blood has not revealed this unto you, but I'll give you the keys of the kingdom, and so forth. And at that time then, verse 21, from that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how they must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders, chief priests, and scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto you. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan. You do not understand these things. And at that time, Jesus took the opportunity to use the words of Peter to present a message to the crowd. He began to tell Peter that which was really involved in this thing called the Jesus walk, the Christian walk. And he says, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what does a man profit if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in his glory, in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. But you see how Peter's words were the catalyst around which Jesus could build his message and touch hearts and lives and bring them to understand his truths. But all the time, everything that happened between Jesus and Peter was like the wood carver working on a piece, a burl of maple or chestnut or oak. And you know how when you're working on these old hard knots, it takes a lot of carving and it takes a lot of sanding and takes a lot of work to work out those rough spots. But when you get through with it all, you come out to with beautiful grain. And that we who work with wood, that wood has character. And that's what Jesus was developing in Peter. And he saw in this man something that would be usable for the sake of his church. We find again and again that Peter still accepted to a degree his understanding of the ministry of Jesus. But I would like you to look with me to the sixth chapter of the Gospel according to John. To the sixth chapter of the Gospel according to John, I'd like to give you a little background. Jesus is telling these people, the people as a whole, of the nature of his life, of eating of his flesh and his blood, that is, partaking of his way of life. And we find that as he presented this message to the disciples and others, from that time on there were many who would not accept it. They couldn't understand the meaning of sacrifice. They couldn't understand the meaning of the sacrifice of a man. And they could not fully understand the pattern of redemption. But as many of them walked away, according to verse 66, from that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Remember, this is the master. Remember, this is the miracle worker. Remember that this is the man who could tell them about things that they could not possibly have known about in any other way. And then it says, Jesus, in his very human feeling of having been forsaken, of losing his followers. Sometimes preachers get this feeling, but whenever I think of this, I look at what is said here. He said, Will you also go away? And here comes Peter again. Here comes that old impetuous Peter. He's got a lot of words. Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life, and we believe and are sure that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then Jesus points out, he said, I've chosen 12, but one of you is a devil. I wondered what Peter thought at that particular time or what the others might have thought. But we note here, thou art the Christ. He's slow to grasp, but slowly he's learning. Slowly he is picking up the truths that the Lord wanted him to grasp, that he might become that which the Lord would want him to be as he ministered among the masses in the world in which he would find himself. Peter was asked when, confronted his Lord one time, as Jesus was talking about forgiveness, and he said, "Well, Master, how many times shall I forgive my brother if he sins against me? Seven times?" And then, according to the 22nd verse of the 18th chapter of Matthew, Jesus said, "Until seven times, but until 70 times seven." And I can imagine that Peter had to think about that later in his ministry. When Peter and Paul, the other great apostle, had a difference of opinion, Paul said he withstood him to the face because he was wrong. Peter had to come to understand then that what Jesus was talking about. I would like now to go into some more serious things concerning the life of Peter. I'd like you to go with me to the 26th chapter of the Gospel according to Matthew. We find here, beginning with verse 33, when Peter was talking with his Lord, "But Peter answered and said unto him, Though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Verily I say unto you that this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. Peter said unto him, Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all the other disciples." This proud man, this strong man, a man who could grab a fish net and drag the shore, put it together, put it out again, this man standing here and say, "Lord, just remember, I may die with you, but I'll never curse and deny you. I'll never turn away from you." Later we find this same man grasping a sword and striking a man and cutting off his ear. But again, the same chapter of Matthew, the 26th chapter, we find beginning with verse 33. Again, I noticed, I read that part of it, but we find later then, as this man was in the judgment hall, verse 69 of the same chapter, "Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied it before them all, saying, I know not what you're saying. Then someone said, This fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came to him someone else, Surely thou art one of them, for thy speech betrayeth thee. Then began he to curse and to swear immediately, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crowed." But I would see then the man Peter. Verse 75, "And Peter remembered the words of Jesus, which said unto him, Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." And this big, strong man who could fight, who could do anything he wanted to do, I can see him with the tears flowing down his cheeks. He wept bitterly with tears. Yes, this man is the man who had said he would go with him all the way, I'll die for you. I can see then the scattering of the disciples. I see Mary Magdalene going to the tomb. I see that the man Peter was the third person at the tomb, apparently, although it does give to us an accounting of women going there. But I'm using Mary Magdalene. I see Mary Magdalene, and then she goes and tells, and John, being a little younger, was able to outrun Peter. But Peter got to the tomb. Can you imagine what that was like? For that man to see this, but at the same time, Peter still lacked understanding. He still did not really feel that his master was alive. And then, according to Mark, the 16th chapter, the message goes out, go tell the disciples and Peter. Go tell Peter that I'm alive. Go and tell him. Now we go back then to the place of meeting. Will you remember they met on the shore of the Sea of Galilee? Simon Peter, according to John 21 and verse 3, says, I go a fishing. And they said, we'll go with you. Going back there. And while they were out there catching fish, They note that someone over there on the shore. And what is there? What is out there? We see that there is a fire. And on the fire, we find fish that are broiling there, frying, getting ready for a cookout. And Jesus is saying to these disciples, who are bringing in this net full of fish, I do not need your fish at all. What I really need, is your devotion to the cause for which I died and for which my God and Creator has raised me from the dead. And here we find then this confrontation with Peter. Here we find that Jesus is wanting to instill in Peter something that he would like to instill in each of us. Tradition says that later Peter was crucified head downward. That he had that he was unwilling to allow himself to die in the same manner as his Lord and Master. Peter, this loving, impetuous man, filled with desire to serve, yet disappointed and disappointing when he was converted. When he was converted, something happened to him. You will remember that when Jesus confronted Peter there on the shore, Simon Peter, lovest thou me? You know that I love you. Simon Peter, lovest thou me? You know that I love you. Simon Peter, lovest thou me? You know that I love you. Feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. Three times denial, three times admission, three times a promise or a confrontation with his master that he in turn through his life might fulfill the promise of his life, which was to serve the Lord when he said, first of all, come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. The outstanding question then of the life of Peter is very human. If we had been there, what would we have done? Probably the same things that Peter did. Probably we may have messed it up worse than he did. But when Peter finally came to the realization that Jesus Christ was Lord and Master, he found the answer to his human question, which he asked according to Matthew 19:27-30. After Jesus' confrontation with the rich young ruler, and he noted that the rich young man had many things, but he really was not willing to give them up for his master, Peter said, behold, we have forsaken all. We left the house and the land. We left those nets there on the shore, and we left our boats rotting up there. We left our families in their fishing shack up there shore of the Sea of Galilee. Behold, we have forsaken all and followed you. What shall we have therefore? And Jesus answered them very simply, behold, ye which have followed me in the regeneration, when the Son of Man shall sit in his throne of his glory, ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And all those who have forsaken father, mother, sister, brother, houses, and lands for my sake shall receive an hundredfold in the world to come, life everlasting. So we come then to the final conclusion of the night. If you had been in Peter's shoes, what would you have done as a disciple? Peter was the inciter of many of the presentations of Jesus. If Peter were alive today, what would he have you do? Because of that which he did and was, he became a feeder, a shepherd of sheep, God's church. Now, I ask you tonight, it really doesn't make much difference what you would have done. The real question tonight is, what will you do? God bless you to contemplate the meaning of that and of these words.